and welcome to the first of our Futurum soundbites, helping you to know what you want to be. I'm Dr. Cressida Lyon, your host, and today we're joined by Dr. Elvira Perez Vallejos. Elvira is an Associate Professor of Digital Technology and Mental Health at the University of Nottingham in the UK. Elvira works on the personalisation of online experiences. Now, this is something that always freaks me out when I've been looking at, say, sandals or whatever on one website, and then every time I go online, adverts for sandals keep popping up everywhere. So Elvira's research project is called ReInTrust, and it focuses on how trustworthy and fair the algorithms used to personalise our online experience really are. He is also interested in the opinions and experiences of young people on these algorithms. But Elvira will tell you much more about this herself. Welcome to the show, Elvira. It's very exciting to have you here.
Thank you, Cressida. So, yep, you've defined really well my work. I'm interested in understanding how algorithms, and just for the audience to know, an algorithm is simply a piece of code with a series of rules that will tell a specific machine or computer what to do with specific data. So the internet is governed by algorithms. Everything we see, there is an algorithm behind. And a very clear example are, for example, recommender systems. Sometimes we want to listen to music, we want to see some videos in YouTube, and the system will recommend specific songs or specific videos depending of what we've been interested in the past. And I think for entertainment, that's very good because the system will suggest things that you probably like. And I think for entertainment, that's good. However, when we're talking about news and about specific facts, that can be a bit dangerous because then the user, it doesn't get exposed to more challenging views, contradicting views, and what we call that the bubble. This is a bubble effect that basically prevents people to be exposed to other opinions.
So you mean if you have a particular opinion and like a comment on a particular political opinion, then you'll get more and more news and information about that political opinion and not get news on others. Is that how you mean?
Exactly. Yeah, that's correct. With our work, we're trying to make sure young people are aware of how algorithms work and also provide them with tools to have more control on the information they consume. So there will be options and settings that will allow less personalization or more. So the person, the user, has control.
So is the focus of your study to sort of enable a set group of young people to know more about this? Or is it to try and change the way the internet works? I don't quite understand that.
Yes, so we do both. We, through a very specific methodology called youth juries, we gather and capture young people's concerns, but also solutions and recommendations. And then we take these solutions to policymakers, to people that work in central government, and we say, children and young people would like to see this reflected on the internet. So it's their job to make sure that children, it's not just about being safe, but it's also about trusting the digital economy. So we create a channel, a direct channel, where children and young people's voices can be heard in central government.
That's fantastic. And if any of our listeners wanted to get involved in your youth juries, then how would they go about doing that?
Well, that's again a very good question, because we are actually recruiting for a next wave of juries. They will take place around in the area of Oxfordshire and Nottinghamshire. And the best way to get in touch is probably by emailing me or emailing one of the ReInTrust team.
What I can do, Elvira, is to pop the web link just below the podcast. So then if any of our listeners want to join a youth jury, then they can just click on that link. So your project sounds really, really exciting. And I know that your background is in mental health and the effects of the digital technologies on mental health. There appears to me to be quite a lot of conflicting information about the effects of digital technology on our mental health. Why is there not any clear-cut advice on how we should be using technology?
That's an excellent question. There is not enough evidence, and the evidence that is out there is not good, is not robust. We do not know how the internet affects. We know, for example, that when we talk about internet addiction, what we're talking here is about the power of this, what we call persuasive design. So for example, apps or any other platforms, they have a specific elements like notifications and colors and design that will make the user more engaged. Young people sometimes, and also adults, they struggle to disengage. So what we are trying to understand is how design can be more user friendly and promote agency and promote more control. So the person is in charge of how much screen time or how much engagement they want to enjoy. So we are looking at developing a measure of online well-being that will describe how you feel after being 2 hours surfing. How do you feel? And we will look at your online behavior. So we know that when you are engaged creatively, you feel good, you feel high, you feel good basically. However, if you're just scrolling, that makes you feel low and basically not that you don't feel well.
Yes, so it's basically depending on what you're doing online and on screens, not just how long you spend on it. So yeah, I suppose that makes it a lot more complex. I guess one thing that we've blogged about back in October is that there's evidence that teenagers these days in 2019 are socialising a lot less, half an hour less on average than they did in the year 2000 in terms of actual physical social interaction. And this is because they're spending more time on screens. The study we were looking at, it was actually unclear whether this was bad for their mental health or not, but I suppose it's a massive issue these days with how much time young people particularly are spending on screens.
It is a massive issue, and there are also very really sad statistics that show specifically in young girls an increase in anxiety and depression. But basically what we want to provide are tools and knowledge so young people are more aware of the risks, but at the same time we cannot escape from the online, so it's how to harness all the benefits and potential.
Yes, definitely. Going back to these algorithms, should we be concerned about the algorithms that are in effect watching us, watching over our lives?
The way we are putting data together is it can reveal so much about a specific person, and if that's for a good reason, it can be very powerful, but the danger here is that if it can be actually a very powerful tool to manipulate people's opinion and people's lives. So it can actually affect your chances of receiving health insurance or accessing to specific jobs, being actually accused or being predicting that you may behave in a specific way. So that worries me. That's why I'm very passionate about privacy and providing the user with more tools to be able to control who is accessing that data.
How does the internet, how do these algorithms get this personal data?
Please be aware that anything that is for free, when you click the terms and conditions, basically you are giving away all your personal data, not just the content, but also your behavior. So where is the mouse tells a designer where you are looking at, and they can use all that information to basically improve a specific design, to be even more persuasive and to engage even more, and then keep you all your attention there, so you are providing more and more personal data to specific companies that are selling and trading and making lots of money. And I think that's really wrong.
Yeah, absolutely. You certainly got me worried about it now. So if I or our listeners wanted to know more about how to protect our privacy, what would you recommend doing?
Well, we have a few tools that help the users to understand a bit more about how the digital economy works and how to protect themselves. So I would advise them to either contact the Unbiased team or the Reintrust team. And we have leaflets, we have materials, we have resources.
Okay, so I'll put the web links for Unbiased and Reintrust below the podcast too. So these are Elvira's research projects, and you'll find loads of helpful information on both the Unbiased and the Reintrust websites. Just click on the links below the podcast.
For the rest of our interview, I wanted to talk more about your job and your career, and in terms of if any of our listeners would be interested in doing a career like yours. So first of all, could you tell us a bit about your job? What does it involve day to day?
Yes, so I do not teach, I do only research. That means I support my colleagues, my team to basically achieve what we set our objectives, but also I do lots of grant writing. So I try to bring lots of external money to develop new research projects and basically understand what the gaps are and basically do that research that is needed.
Okay, so sort of writing new research projects, and also for the research that's ongoing, do you have a lot of data analysis? Do you do a lot of work on the computer, or is it mainly talking to students and suggesting what they need to do and doing interviews? Or
yeah, we do a bit of everything. We have we collect lots of information through questionnaires, so that provides quantitative data that needs to be analyzed. And then we also do all the conversations, discussions that happen in the youth juries and focus groups with audio records, transcribe, and then do the thematic analysis, that more qualitative analysis. So we capture lots of data, lots of analysis, and then we write papers, we write scientific journals or magazines, blogs, tweeting. So we try to disseminate as much as we can and ensure that our research has a big impact on the real world.
How did you get into this career? Is this something you always wanted to do?
Yeah. I always wanted to be a psychologist. I'm from Spain, so I remember reading that word for the first time and not understanding why it had a P.
Yeah.
And in Spain, we don't pronounce P. So I was just intrigued. And then when I find out it was the study of the soul, and I was thinking, wow, this is amazing. I really want to be a psychologist. So I basically didn't change my mind until now.
What are the sorts of skills that you need to have to be successful in an academic career such as yours?
I have to say that nowadays what is valued is having researchers that have a very multidisciplinary background, and that's very challenging. That means you need to, as a researcher, you have to build a lot of resilience, because you will be working with teams that do not think, for example, I'm a psychologist, I work with computer scientists. It's a different field, it's a different language, it's a different culture. So you have to build that resilience. You have to also develop interpersonal skills to help you navigate through uncertainty and through not knowing exactly what you're doing until everything clicks together. Don't be scared of failure, but just keep going and build strength.
And sort of going back in time now, what were you like at school? You must have been really hardworking to have got where you are today. Were you very studious?
Not really. I was very responsible, and I was always concerned to... So I remember arriving home, and first everything. The first thing was to do the homework, so it's out of the way. But not, and but I wouldn't, I've never considered myself a very smart, very clever person. It's just hard work, and yeah, being very responsible.
You think your success is from through hard work, resilience, and persevering?
Because yeah, I remember always thinking, oh, obviously in a class of maybe 30 people, there are 3 or 4 people that are naturally clever. They get it at the first time. They seem to remember things once they read it. And I remember thinking, I'm not like you. I need to read it like 10 times before I understand and remember exactly what the text is about. Numbers, mathematics, I always struggle. So it's just, but then you persevere and once you get it, it's like, wow, I understand it now. So it's like, I love that moment of where a eureka moment. So I guess that's what keeps me moving forward.
So finally, Elvira, what would your top tips be for a young person who is interested in a career like yours in digital technology or mental health or psychology?
So an academic career probably entails to do an undergraduate degree in, it can be computer science, psychology, liaise, start engaging in little research projects, maybe do a master's, apply for a PhD. In Nottingham, we are very lucky. We have a Center for Doctoral Training that is part of computer science, but is extremely open to multidisciplinary research. We are very interested always in attracting students that are passionate, that are dynamic, and that they have a vision of how they want society to be in maybe 30 years' time. So there is, it's about engaging with probably the right people and they start getting involved in little projects to understand also what research means, because sometimes, and I've seen that a few times, you romanticize what research is, and then once you discover what it is, for some people is what they want to do for the rest of their lives, and for other people they say, oh no, this is not for me.
Yeah, so better to have some experience of a small project before you commit yourself to a career in it. And I suppose what we were talking about earlier, having skills, developed resilience is very important. And also, like we were saying, learning to cope with multidisciplinary research and be willing to learn new skills. Elvira, that was absolutely fascinating. I've really enjoyed listening to you, and I hope that everyone else will have learnt lots too. I certainly have. Thank you so much for talking to us today, Elvira.
Thank you.
It's been you're welcome. It's been fantastic to hear your story and to share it with our listeners. So if you have enjoyed the first of our Futurum sound bites, then please make sure to share it and like it with your friends on social media. We're on all of the social media channels, Instagram, Facebook, Twitter, LinkedIn and YouTube. If you look for at Futurum Careers, you'll just find us there. And tune in next time, of course. Thank you all for listening. It was great to have you here.